Glenn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brett DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave.
As long as they can, turn off the screen, go climb a tree, get dirt on their hands. I believe we gotta forgive and make amends, 'cause nobody gets a second chance to make new old friends. I believe in working hard. Good, and most mamas ought to qualify for sainthood. I believe most Friday nights look better.
What do you think, Dave? You think most people are good?
I think most people are good.
All of us have a little bad in us, I think. None of us are perfect. I think that's the first step in
realizing. I don't think we strive to be bad.
Yeah, but it's, if you look at the state of news and media and social media today, they think that everyone is bad. Everybody has latent racism and all these other isms going on. And frankly, I'd like to celebrate a little joy today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. It's the day after Christmas. How was your Christmas, Dave?
Most excellent. Yours?
Oh, excellent. I consider myself exceedingly blessed because even though it was a fair bit of travel, I flew to Carson City. I flew to Reno to visit with my siblings and my mother, Carson City, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed there. We did Christmas on the on my side of the family there on Saturday because we didn't think we didn't think Jesus would mind. That was the 23rd, 22nd. It was
yeah,
the 22nd.
22nd.
Not that, you know, this is actually Jesus' birthday anyway, but it was when we choose to celebrate. Anyway, right. We didn't think he'd mind, and we did a full-on Christmas dinner, blah, blah, blah. And the next day, I jumped on an airplane, and I flew back to Oregon, in southern Oregon, to spend it with my wife's family. And so even though there's, you know, the hassles of traveling and whatever, I thought I was blessed. I could spend quality time, joyful time with both sides of the family.
That's impressive.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
And we went to church. So our tradition is we go to church on New Year's Eve. I mean, New Year's Eve. Christmas Eve. New Year's Eve is coming up this next week.
Yeah, right.
On Christmas Eve. And, of course, it's my in-law's church. And what really struck me about the pastor's message and all the talk and the part of the message with the Christmas story and all that, but he really focused on joy.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about joy today because it is in short supply sometimes in our culture and in our society and in our discourse, especially political discourse and Facebook discourse, really.
Totally.
All right. So this is what his basic message is. There's a conflict. You cannot have joy, experience joy. Something we would all like to have more of, right? What would we like next year to look like? More joy, more happiness, more laughter, maybe more money, but, you know, more joy is up there. He says you can't have joy and fear and anxiety at the same time, that's a joy killer.
Yeah, that's
right? True.
Yeah.
So how are you going to feel anxious about everything, about your kids or about money or about the weather or about politics or all this anxiety? We have this culture of anxiety that kind of infiltrates everything. And you also can't hold on to anger and resentment and feel joy, right? So
I can see that.
You slighted me maybe 10 years ago and I'm still holding on to that. And that's a joy killer.
Yeah,
right?
I know people like that.
Yeah, I'm making that up, by the way. I didn't know Dave 10 years ago.
No, you didn't. And but I wouldn't have slighted you anyway.
At any rate, that reminded me. I thought he was going to use, it was one of my favorite phrases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you hold on to resentment, and it's tied to the concept of forgiveness. And but you hold on to resentment, it's like drinking poison and hopes the other, gosh, I
hoping the other person dies.
And hopes the other person dies. Yeah. You drink the poison.
I've heard that,
because they're off doing, they don't know you're resentful. They don't they don't have the negative feeling. You're eating up inside.
Right.
Which is why, you know, it's tied to the philosophy that forgiveness is really a gift to those who forgive. It's not so much that you forgive someone who's wronged, you know, done you wrong. You might think that that's the gift of the wrongdoer, right? But really, it's a gift that we have been given and been shown the way, so that it's a gift that benefits the person who's been doing the forgiving. How else are you going to let go of that anger and resentment, what have you? Anyways, not enough in our community. I fear a little bit, and I see it more. I mean, Salem's a great place. There's so many great people. We've talked to a lot of them on the show. We're going to highlight so many great things that are happening in the Mid-Valley. Benevolences, initiatives, people volunteering, all sorts of things. But I worry about the national discourse and the culture eating away and affecting the Salem community. Specifically, we talked about this before, Salem and factions. I've been saying for years that if we want to get good stuff done in Salem, we have to all work together. Mayor Anna Peterson always called us Salem the collaboration capital, right? The collaboration city. And thank you for your service, Mayor Peterson, who volunteered, I believe, for 6 years. But it's true. And it was just a tradition that carried on from Mayor Janet Taylor before her. And when we're infighting as a community, we don't get good stuff done. So
that's true.
You know, and there's so many great things, and maybe we should highlight here in a couple of days, but so many great things have happened in Salem. This should be considered the golden era of Salem from the year 2000, 2002-ish up till now. How many incredible things have happened in terms of, you know, the Croc Center and the Conference Center, and we've mentioned all of these in previous shows, the railroad bridge becoming what a beautiful asset it is, connecting those two great parks, and the new bridge, and so on and so forth. We're not going to get into that today. I worry a little bit about joy and what eats away at us. So now we have factions. Anytime you have people running for office that say, well, you need me to protect you from blank. Right, which is that's all too common in politics. But here in this community, when it's supposed to be civic servants and hopefully some sort of servant leadership, it's not, oh, let's vilify and let's divide. And we literally had people walking door to door telling people that you needed this candidate to protect you from the evil, which is the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, which, mind you, is the most pro-Salem institution there is. But evil, really?
That's extreme.
It is, and it's. You don't want to be electing people like that.
No.
You know, then how are we supposed to get along? How are we supposed to say, well, this is important to you, and this is important to me? How are we going to do both? This is important to you. This is important to me. In which order are we going to do them? How are we going to divide our resources? Let's see who can gain. I mean. I don't know. That's how we get things good done in Salem. So we talked about this before, and we had some disagreement when we came to the police bond measure just a couple of years ago. So the police bond measure, now under construction, of course, failed the first time. You know why? Because there was a small faction against it, right?
Hmm.
And if you go back to a long string of positive bond measures where the people said, hey, tax me, everybody in the community kind of got together. The Chamber of Commerce actually was not the decision maker. It was the place where the community discourse happened. So when the school district says, we have so much deferred maintenance and we really need money and blah, 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 and they identified over $400,000. This is 10 years ago. And everybody got together and said, we don't think this will pass, but we think this might have passed. And if you limit it this much, then we're all going to support you. And they got the largest bond measure for a school district in Oregon history passed in Salem at the precipice of a recession because there wasn't anybody on the no campaign.
Mm.
Right. So, and the same thing with the fire bond, same thing with the police bond, parks and rec. He had some people against the library levy, which happened, you know, more than 15 years ago. And unfortunately, there was also a parks district bond measure. But at any rate, all of these good things that we get to move forward, it's because we've gotten together, hashed out the differences, and the people who didn't get their way still jumped on board.
That's important.
Right?
Yeah. Compromise.
They're still like,
compromise.
I mean, I'm a little bit embarrassed, but not afraid to admit that I voted no on buying the Union Railroad Bridge for a dollar. The railroad, like
a dollar?
Like a dollar. The city bought it for a dollar, but it came with it about $4 million of liabilities. So they took it off the hands, but it needed, you know, it needed to be sealed, it needed to be painted, it needed to be, you know, riprap needed to be upgraded and all this stuff. So I thought, that's an awfully expensive liability, you know, to buy it for a dollar. Well, I don't think I was right. In retrospect, I don't think I was right. I think Mayor Taylor and her leadership and all the other councilors vote for that created this really cool bridge to walk across, to bike across. And now, we've got races across and community events. And that's a great thing. And I didn't like, oh, so-and-so.
You're still not holding the resentment still.
Yeah. We haven't had Dan Clem on the show. I'll tell one quick story before the break. But I've told this story about my friend Dan Clem before. And I sat next to him in city council, and Dan would argue. I mean, he would argue. And he's passionately fighting for what he believes is right for West Salem. He's passionate. He's a bulldog. I mean, I just love him to death, right? And I let him go, and I'm sitting right next to him. You know how people are all heated, and they're all emotionally excited.
Nice.
So, don't get me wrong. He was civil, but he was passionate. And then time comes for the vote on the issue, and I didn't vote his way. Right. So at the end of the council, he gives me the glare, a total glare. Right. And then at the end of the council meeting, gavel goes down. We're adjourned. He starts wrapping up his book. He goes, well, I didn't win that one. See you next week.
Wow.
Right. And I wish more people were like that. I didn't win that one. I fought the good fight. It didn't go my way. We'll see you next week, and we'll work together for something else. That's the kind of joy where it's just like we're all in the same boat, and we're still, tugging this boat in the right direction, hopefully collaboratively. So you don't win them all, but we're all trying to make the place a better place. Anyway, I want to talk after the break. We're going to talk a little bit about things that eat away you, the listener, on your personal sense of joy. This is Brent D. Hart along with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Guy, right, aren't you, Dave?
Big time, yeah.
And what else in social media? Instagram?
Yeah, occasionally.
Twitter?
I used to be big in Twitter, but not very much.
Okay.
I should be, because I'd like to follow the president. Yeah. I'd like to get those tweets first, you know, before they get disseminated through the media.
Yeah, before people tell you how to think about them.
Yeah, right.
That is funny. So we're talking about fear and anxiety, anger and resentment, and how they kill joy. And all right, I'm going to make a bold statement here, but it seems to me that part of the infection in our society that's killing the joy is social media.
Really?
So don't you have any people on your feed that are always saying something negative, or they're angry? They're angry. America's angry all the time. So I find, and I see this with my friends on the right, my friends on the left, although I notice it more on the people on the left. Maybe it's because Trump is president.
Yeah.
But they're really angry all the time, and they're posting things in anger. So they go to websites that get them all stirred up, because that's their source of information, right? So they'll find out why they should be indignant that day. Why, truly, why they should be angry, why they should be frustrated, who they need to hate today. And then they go to social media and they spew it. They disseminate it, but they don't see themselves as part of the degradation of discourse in America anymore.
The problem?
Yeah, they don't see, oh, I know, I'm all about love. And blah, blah. It's funny, because the last 57 posts you had is all about who you hate. So it's distressing. And I don't know how you consume that. I'm big into what we consume intellectually has a lot to do with how our brains work. What we consume emotionally has a lot to do with how we see the world and how we feel about things. And obviously what we consume with our food, that speaks for itself. But they are consuming negative emotions. They are looking for it every day. I've got a family member that trolls why we hate blank.
Serious?
Yes, name of the website. Why We Hate. And then they go there and then they turn and repost that. They'll grab it in the post and yeah, this is why we all need to hate blank.
Wow.
Right? And so the anger, the indignation, it just gets so exhausting. And a lot of it, of course, is aimed at national politics and at Trump. But I see it. Okay, so I'm going to tell stories, no names or anything. But the way people react to things, it's like we have become addicted to our indignation, right?
Yeah.
You ever have a friend that became addictive to crisis, a crisis junkie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've had friends that—
Ambulance chasers?
Had to try to create a crisis about whether her haircut was even or not, right?
It's wow. Like
everything has to be a crisis, and because that's where they get their adrenaline, because there's nothing really life-threatening going on. There's nothing really pushing that adrenaline. They create crises where you're like, it's not really the big deal. We don't have to worry about that.
You need to let that go.
So I had somebody post something about, and this was prior to the Kavanaugh hearings or during the Kavanaugh hearings.
Okay.
Made a bold statement, said, I believe all victims. I have chosen to believe all victims. They must be heard. Okay. That's all it was.
That's not a bad thing.
No, no, no. I didn't have any beef with it at all. I'm like, strong statement. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
But please tell me also that you believe Juanita Broderick. Please, if you're going to say that, then please tell me that you, because this person is way off the left side, right? Please say that you also will acknowledge that Bill Clinton is a serial predator.
Right.
And a rapist. To his credit, he did. He did. So very pleased with that. But then he started to bait for a debate because he wanted to make the conversation about Kavanaugh. He wanted to make the conversation about Trump and the Supreme Court and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I didn't take it. I kept saying, I don't know what you're arguing about. I'm like, I didn't say any of these things. Yeah, but you. Yeah, but you. And he was just picking a debate.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened more recently, too, where it's like I made a statement and then he said, yeah, but what about? And he reached back in the past about something he doesn't even know. What about? And he starts picking a fight. I'm like, you know what? Life's too short. Unfriend.
Nice.
Yeah.
That happened with my wife, actually, on her trip back over the weekend. She was replying to something that somebody commented on about the national debt and everything. And she went out and got the facts, posted the facts. And then this person was like, oh, the Kool-Aid must be good or something like that. And I'm like,
wow.
Oh. So she made a comment back. And my friend who actually made the original post told her to unfriend him because so-and-so was a good friend of his.
You don't want to get too trite.
Well, no. And I'm like, he could have unfriended her, right?
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
Yeah. And that's not something I usually do. I will hide it if I just feel like I'm being fed too much hate and anger.
Sure.
And I don't want my personal joy to be killed.
Or unfollow
right?
that person.
Yeah.
You could unfollow
right.
them.
You don't listen to because it happened to some people who are close to me. And I'm like, I can't listen to that every single day.
No.
It's just anger, hate. So there was another one recently. This is where people, we've gotten to a place where we want to believe our end of the political spectrum, you know, and we want to believe that how we view society is right, even the facts are all wrong and they don't line up.
Yeah.
So there was something, I hate to even bring it up, basically saying, you know, hey, I like the current city council. I think they're more representative. And if you're an affluent, relatively affluent white male, you may feel as though you're being threatened. But basically saying, we need to change. This is a nice change from having relatively affluent white males. And I'm like, oh, all right, let's substitute the word Jew in there and ask me if that's hate speech.
No kidding.
Let's substitute the word black in there and ask me if that's hate speech. And then there's just merely the facts, right?
Sure.
So Linda Norris, city manager, 7 years before our current city manager. Woman, by the way. She wasn't a male. What about 14 years out of the last 18, maybe at least 14 years, white women mayors? It's like, you're still blaming anything on fluent white males, and not just kind of conveniently ignoring the fact that we've had women in authority in Salem for a huge chunk of the last 15, 20 years.
Sure. Facts.
Yeah. And just the whole, I'm angry, and I'm angry about this. But
they ignore the facts.
Yeah. So that's, and our social media allows people to do that, because anybody can get a social media account. Right, and then we try to. Gives everybody them, is up in arms about, and tries to make controversy where there isn't. Tries to make dissatisfaction. Wants to paint everyone as racist. Wants to, and this is where, you know, we kind of get in the national scene. And I think it needs to be okay that we feel as though trade deals should favor America, not other countries, without being called a xenophobe.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Right. That we believe that sovereign nations want to protect their borders without being called a racist and a xenophobe.
Wow.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
We want to be able to believe that, what, 60 years after World War II ends, that Western Europe should pay their share of defending their part of the world.
Absolutely. Right?
Without being, I mean, it's... That does, okay, no matter how you feel about Trump, you can't paint people with those isms, you know, or those phobes just because they have this public policy view. So, yeah, actually, I always wonder, well, we're still in Germany. The president's asking them to pay 3% of their defense, of their GNP towards the defense. Yeah, they're angry at us. He's, upsetting the apple cart. Well, it's just like telling your friend you want to, who never buys when you go out for a bite to eat. Guy, hey, dude, you need to pay this time. You never pay, right? He might be angry, but that doesn't mean you don't need to say it, right? Let him be angry because we're reaching into the pocket, or President Trump is trying to. But it's true. We taxpayers are paying that bill, and it's not so much to ask. You know, we've been protecting, you know, a big ally of NATO and not about. Anyway, that.
Well, I believe, and I'm right there with Trump. Mm-hmm. We are not the world's police.
Right, and we should...
And we should not be. The UN has that, right?
Really? Is that what you want, Dave?
Well, the rest of the countries, the rest of the countries should be taking care of their own. We should not be helping everyone else.
Yeah, the point being is, if you agree with any of these public policy things, then you're the angry, hate for it. I'm like, no, I'm a pragmatic one. It's like... we may disagree on whether the wall is the right tool, but we really shouldn't disagree that sovereign nations protect borders.
Yes.
So all of them do. This is not like, why should America be different and not want to control its borders of people coming in? It's a very strange psyche thing we have, where we need to be angry and hateful toward anybody who doesn't want to see illegal immigration crossing the border.
They weren't arguing about it when, after 9/11, we closed our borders, both north and south.
All right. So, and this this leads into some of that joy killing and the racism, seeing racism everywhere conversation. So we'll be right back and talk to that about that. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now back to Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here talking with Dave Bourne. We are your Newsmaker crew every weekday at the noon hour, talking about Salem primarily and the Marion and Polk region, about topics and individuals and institutions that affect us here on 1430 KYKN. So welcome back. We're talking a little bit of this holiday week, how much joy there was this last weekend with family, and how much joy we experience this time of year. We take some time off. We go a little shopping. We sing some songs. We ring the bells. And then turn around and look in a society and so many joy killers. And I noticed that social media, amongst the other issues, like people are concerned about their privacy rights and how much sharing goes on with Facebook and all of those controversies, but also how much anger. I mean, I like to see, hey, my kid did great in his wrestling tournament. hey, we're able to see grandma up in the snow cabin or something. You know, things about family. I'd love to see that. I'm on Facebook, although sometimes I wonder if I should be. I love to see pictures of family, pictures of vacation. I like this stuff. You know, the people who think they're making a difference by spewing about politics all the time. I mean all the time. I don't mean like once a week.
Now,
I mean
are these like, these people that you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people I know. Some of my relatives might be relatives. Some of them are friends from long back, and some are current friends here in the community. But and it happens on the left, and it happens on the right. But, boy, I'm just imploring people to realize that when it is that you start to cross the line and get addicted to the negative thoughts, addicted to the negative feed because they have to feel indignant and angry every day, right?
Yeah.
In that sense, that becomes their sense of identity. A sense of I'm on a mission. This needs. I had somebody tell me like these things need to be exposed, and I'm going to expose the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Well, that's
going to
work.
Have fun with that.
So it reminds me of something. another topic is one of my favorites. Is things that are controversy that shouldn't be controversy because we're so sensitive to some things. So incredibly sensitive. We saw an actor a couple weeks ago and got in trouble for using the N-word in a historical reference about his movie and in the times in which the movie was set, right? Remember that? So you can't use that. He didn't say N-word. He actually used the word. He said, back in these times, people said this word, and now people don't say this word, and had to go on the apology tour because
it was taken out of context?
He didn't say the euphemism. He said the word instead of the euphemism. So I get that it is an emotional word and ignites a lot of emotions and with people. But I don't know. That controversies, they don't have to be controversies. So this goes back, for me, it goes back to 1983. All right. And you're old enough, you probably remember this. It was Howard Cosell. He's calling a game. I think it was the Redskins. Alvin Garrett was the running back. And he said, boy, you know, it gets him. You know, gives him to that little monkey, is how he referred to this football player, right?
Yeah, lost his career.
Lost his career.
I know.
And Howard was, love him or hate him, and a lot of people hated him, but he was like, did so much for the black athlete in his whole career, back with fighting for Muhammad Ali. He actually created the Jackie Robinson Foundation, and that's, you know, that kind of thing. And so he says this word, and it was an unfortunate phrase. He said later, I said, that's a phrase I use when I'm looking at my grandkids playing. You know, he just thought he's small, he's elusive, he can really jump around. You know, he didn't mean it in a racial manner, but right. It was unfortunate. And he goes, should have gone, oops, mea culpa, and gone on. But he lost his career over it.
That's right? A little extreme.
That's when I started to notice. I mean, that was 1983.
Yeah.
And then like 14 years later, we see Fuzzy Zeller. And this one has always stuck with me. And this was for the Masters golf tournament. You remember the golfer?
Yeah.
Great guy, by all accounts, great guy. No history whatsoever, racism. And he referred. So in the Masters, if you win the Masters, next year you get to pick the menu for the dinner for all the past champions. So okay. There's a dinner where all the past champions get to come in. Whoever the current reigning champion is gets to pick the menu. Right. So he made a comment when Tiger had just won. And he made a comment about having fried chicken on the menu next year. Like, oh, man, that was.
Well, maybe he wanted it.
I can't remember if he said he wanted it or didn't want it. But whatever it was probably unfortunate to say.
It was.
It was not racist.
No.
It was not hate filled. It was not anger filled. Fuzzy. Had a reputation of being having a good sense of humor, being lighthearted, right? So he was none of those things, and yet it was a huge controversy. Paid a big price for it in public relations. I can't remember if he lost sponsors or what have you, but that was totally unnecessary. You know, punch him in the arm, you know, say Fuzzy, that was stupid or whatever, something. But it should not. He was not hate-filled. He was not racist. He didn't mean it in a negative way. But everybody reacts to it in a negative. And there's a controversy that didn't need to exist.
Yeah.
Right? The other thing that bothered me is why, like we've we're supposed to pretend that there's no soul food restaurants in America.
Yeah.
So there is black culture. Sure. We can embrace it. We could, should be able to acknowledge it. Now,
exactly.
If a Scottish golfer won and he made some crack about Scottish or shepherd's pie, right?
Yeah.
Actually, if Tiger won and he made some comment about pod Thai noodles because Tiger's half Thai, right?
Yeah.
Would those have been racist? There's certain things that we're oversensitive about it that's really a killjoy. Oversensitive about it. And we don't need to jump all over people. Kevin Hart, anyone? Right?
Yeah.
Kevin Hart.
I think a lot of
there's some teachable moments here.
I think a lot of sense of humor has been lost.
Yes. Well, if we can't rely on our comics to make fun of society and make fun of themselves and make
some of them have lost their careers over their comedy because nobody has the sense of humor anymore.
So Kevin Hart, who's hysterical, we think he's hysterical.
I think
incredibly talented,
nice guy too.
And you know, so earlier this decade, he was on his stand-up routine. He had a routine that he was talking about being a father and fearing that his son or sons would be gay. Right.
Right.
I could see that'd be hurtful. If you're a gay man, you're like, what? Your son's not good enough to be like me, right?
That's however, a little sensitive.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt here. All right. Like, I don't know how many straight cis males. All right, we're cis males. How many breeders? Are out there with, that really, really wish that their sons grew up to be gay males. Right. So in comedy, you explode that and he turns it into this, you know, comedic moment. Whatever. Right. Let's not try to defend that or his humor. Maybe it's offensive to some people. Of course, I'm offended by Sarah Silverman, but I don't see anybody losing a job over it. But
no.
Right. All right.
But in retrospect, if you pay money to go see a comedy show, expect to be offended in some way. Because that's their job, and you know what you're getting into when you put your money down to go see a comedy show.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so...
And so they have a big disclaimer that they have to do now at a comedy show.
They do?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So, Kevin Hart thing. Now that we see him in all these family movies, you know, all these... He's not a hateful person.
No.
He's not an angry, hateful, bigoted person.
I've seen his show.
So
he's
why
not.
Does he have to lose the job of hosting the Oscars?
Because they're too sensitive.
Too sensitive. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And then when you're holding on to anger and resentment, how much joy is there? Right?
Right.
So we have a whole society that is too sensitive, jumping on the anger and resentment, and you need to pay for this. Even if, you know what I mean? Like, you need to pay for this. But really, it's that... anger and resentment. Who's paying the price? The people walking around all the time drinking the poison.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart is not a hateful person.
No.
Right? We don't think.
No, you know, I've seen him. I went to his comedy show.
All right, last one.
Yeah.
Last one. Megyn Kelly.
Oh.
Megyn Kelly. So.
She got railroaded, I think.
Well, they're probably looking for a reason to fire her anyway. So I get that.
Yeah,
so ratings, and maybe they weren't happy with what they bought. But she asks this ignorant question, and I don't fault her for asking it, really. It's a dumb question. But honestly, there's probably a lot of people who are younger than 40 that still don't know the answer. Because she said, what is racist about blackface? Right. And if you read about blackface, and it goes back to the minstrel shows all the way early 1800s, and how blacks were depicted and how they were stereotyped and so on and so forth and so on, go on and on and on. So there's a very long history, like we're going to 190 years, you know. What's racist about blackface? Well, she doesn't know. So she's demonstrating her ignorance. She should have looked it up before she said it out loud on national TV. Right. So to me,
maybe she was thinking it was going to be a teachable moment for those under 40.
Yeah. No.
No.
I think she was just, she just blundered. You know what? And in my opinion, what should have happened in America is she went on the next air the next day, which she did. She goes, boy, I've really learned some lessons from some of my colleagues. It should have been like, maybe do have her do a segment of the history of blackface and why there is a deep seated, not just multi-generation, but, you know, century plus of this igniting these emotions, right? Do a segment on it. Do your apology, you know. Make it something that make fun of Megan about, but lose your job. Lose your livelihood.
Too extreme.
You have been talking on the air, live air, for a long, long time, and you make this stupid comment. It's not the only stupid comment she's ever made, but you just shouldn't lose your livelihood over it.
No.
You know what I mean? That's just such an overreaction. And now Kevin Hart, we lose Kevin Hart for the Oscars over something from 8 years ago. It's like, wow, people. Anyway, those are my examples where we're so quick to jump on social media, and any idiot has a Twitter, you know, and then somebody tweeted, yeah, well.
So what?
Yeah.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, any of those, Tumblr, it gives everyone a platform to say what's on their mind. Right. And too many people are too getting hurt over it, taking it out of context. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody via text?
Yes.
And you lose, they totally take something wrong the way that you texted it, because, you know, they can't see your face, they can't hear your tone, they're totally misreading what you texted to them. That happened to me with my brother.
Mm.
We're still not talking.
Oh no.
It's
got to blame it on the text. You can't read, but especially my sense of humor.
But he won't take my call. He'll text me, but he won't take my call.
That's unfortunate.
It is.
Well, we will pray for some joy in his heart brother, because that anger and indignation and frustration and hate, and it's happening in our community sometimes where people are. We need to work more collaboratively together. So for Salem Kaiser, we have to work on disagreeing with people, but then working with people for the common good.
It's called a community for a reason.
Yeah.
Community.
And it just
all together.
Breaks my heart to see people, what's the right word?
Too deep.
Yeah, you can see my brains through my eyes right here trying to find that word.
There's smoke coming out of your ears.
Mayor Swaim back in the day, and he had one of the most uncivil city councils. Very uncivil. They would yell at people. People would come from neighborhood associations to report, and they would personally attack them. It was really unpleasant. Yeah, it was unpleasant. And then he was out of town, and he referred to some of the civic leaders because they weren't, you know, progressive enough. They were knuckle-dragging Neanderthals.
Wow.
That was the end of his mayoral duties.
Well, I would hope so.
Muscle-dragging Neanderthals.
And I think I remember
that. The greatest people in the community, the people who are the most benevolent, making the most positive things happening, but they didn't agree with him on blah.
Right.
So let's go to the name calling and the villainization. Ugh. Right. Let's make them villains.
I'm so over that.
It. Sam, you got it. Can't stop doing that. Okay, we got to take a quick break. We'll wrap it up here in the next segment. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
I don't know about you, but it was a joyful time for me yesterday.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
How much family was around?
Oh, just my wife and my stepdaughter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we had a nice, quiet day. Stepdaughter made breakfast after we opened the presents, and she bought way too much for us, but we bought way too much for her.
No coal in your stocking.
There was not.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it was an awesome day.
Our family was full of joy too.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was like, we have to just stop and take those moments and just realize how much joy there is. It's like, we spent more time going to bed or waking up every day and counting our blessings and how many things are right in our lives.
That smile.
Our family, in our community.
Going to bed with a smile, waking up with a smile. That's always good.
And not going and searching for things that make us angry and then letting it rule our day.
We should talk about that in the New Year's resolutions.
There you go. Yeah, I liked it.
New Year's resolutions.
So let's wrapping up when it comes to civic governance, and I mentioned the incivility of city council and mayor quite a while back now. I remember one of the last in that group left when she left office. She snidely remarked that, you know, well, these people that I'm leaving you to, you'll never see another public hearing, is what her quote on, because she thought that we were exclusionary or something like that.
What?
Well, yeah, it's kind of one of those weird things, like people who think that Gore won Florida in 2000, right? It's one of those, there hasn't ever been a request for a public hearing on a land use matter that wasn't granted. It's right. Like, where do you get that? But I think she believed it. I think she believed that all these people are one tribe and they're only going to listen to their tribe, which was, I think, could have been further from the truth.
Yeah.
And now we're in a situation where people are, you know, well, this person's not in my tribe, so I don't need to listen to them. Or that's not how my tribe is going to vote. Right, I use tribe instead of party instead of, you know, whatever your group of people.
Yeah, if you ever played the game telephone,
yeah, oh yeah,
In like in, you know, kindergarten or whatever.
Yeah,
you go around the group and you start out with one sentence and they repeat it all the way around. It's amazing how the message changed all the
Indeed.
Way around.
Yeah,
and that happens today with social media, because they're not just. They don't just copy and paste it, because if everybody just copied and pasted it, the message would be the same.
Or they're copying and pasting something that's been debunked by Snopes,
right?
Like 5 years ago.
Not checking the facts. That's worse.
So I got a funny family story. So,
oh boy.
Believe it or not, and not everybody in the extended family believes the same political beliefs as everyone else.
Of course not.
So
you can't.
This poor, my poor niece. So.
Your niece?
Yeah, I love her.
How old is she?
Oh, she's, you know, adult. She's, you know, adult with two kids. But so she's quite often outnumbered,
really?
Unfortunately.
Okay.
Quite often outnumbered. And I try not to be overly emotional about it. I don't try not to get caught up in the hostility, the anger, right? So, but I'm pretty pragmatic about it. And you've heard me talk. I'm like, I think we can think this about public policy. I think we think this about, you know, the wall or immigration or trade balances, da da da.
So you didn't learn your lesson not to talk politics during holidays?
Yeah. Alcohol, family, and politics. Always a good combination. So, but anyway, we're discussing, and this was actually Thanksgiving. And so when I was talking about what was going on in politics, and we mentioned Trump and Korea, and she just hates Trump. Hates Trump.
Yeah.
Get it. I get it. All right. But she couldn't talk rationally public policy. Right. So we're talking about, but he opened up communications with North Korea that hasn't been done, you know, in 50, 60, 68 years, right?
Easily.
No president's done it. And the response was, yeah, but Trump. I'm like, okay, but, you know, uh-huh. But yeah, but Trump. And then he said, and before he went, he did, and he took credit for this didn't happen. But I said, do you see? And she's getting animated and
sure.
kind of loud. And I'm like, do you see what's happening here? That you hate the man so much, you can't talk about the presidency. You can't talk about the historical perspective, right?
Right.
You can't just talk about, hey, Nixon opened communications with China. Trump, maybe he wasn't entirely successful, but he did something no other president has done.
Right.
Right. And we can just, can't we just discuss it? Without, you know, anyway, I love her and the family. And it's
you guys
great,
parted ways and didn't talk the rest of the day.
It was good natured. There's another family member we can't talk to. But
oh, my.
Anyway, have some joy. Have some joy this week and take some time to enjoy it. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
See you tomorrow.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.